"Why is that?" the doctor asked, as he folded his hands behind his head and looked up at the ceiling. I was not sure of the question. "Sir?" I asked, sounding hollow. The doctor tilted his head toward mine.
"Tell me, young David, why is it that you are in foster care?"
he asked with irritation in his voice. The doctor's question was like a punch in the face. I felt creepy all over. I didn't mean to make him mad, but I just didn't understand his questioning. I don't know, sir. He picked up his pencil and began to tap the eraser on top of his desk.
Are you telling me that you have no idea why you are in foster care? Is that what you're telling me?
He asked as he made more notes. I closed my eyes, trying to think of an answer. I couldn't think of the right response, so I leaned close to the doctor's desk instead. What you writing, sir?
The doctor flung his arm on his desk, covering his notes.
I could tell I had upset him. I sat rigid in the back of the seat. He fixed his eyes on mine.
Perhaps I should set the ground rules. I ask the questions. I am the psychiatrist, and you, he said, pointing his pencil at me, are the patient. Now, do we understand each other?
He nodded his head as if telling me I should agree, and smiled when I returned his nod.
So, he said in a kinder voice, tell me about your mother.
As I cleared my thoughts, my mouth seemed to hang open. I felt so frustrated. Maybe I wasn't so smart, but I didn't think that I deserved to be treated like an idiot. The doctor studied my every expression as he took more notes. Well, I began as I fumbled for words, my mother, I really don't think she was... He cut me off with a wave of his hand.
No! In here I perform the analyses, you answer the questions. Now tell me, why did your mother abuse you?
I let out a deep sigh. My eyes scanned behind his desk. I tried to imagine what was behind the window blinds. I could hear the sounds of cars rushing past the building. I imagined Rudy sitting in his Queen Mary-sized car listening to the radio station that played oldies.
"Young man, Daniel, are you with me today?" the doctor asked in a bellowing voice.
I lurched deeper into the back of the chair, ashamed that I was caught daydreaming in the presence of a doctor. I felt ashamed for acting like a little kid.
"I asked you, why did your mother abuse you?"
Without thinking, I snapped back. How do I know? You're the doctor. You figure it out. I don't understand you, your questions. And every time I try to answer them, you cut me off. Why should I tell you about me when you don't even know my name? I stopped to catch my breath when I heard a buzzing sound. The doctor pushed a button, picked up the phone, nodded, then put the phone back down. He waved his hand in front of me, as he jotted down another note before saying,
"Would you hold that thought for me? That's all the time we have for this week, and let me see. I'll pencil you in for next week. How's that sound? I think we have a real good start here, Daniel. Okay? So I'll see you next week. Goodbye now,"
he said with his head bent over his desk. I gazed at him in total disbelief. My mind was so jumbled that I didn't know how to react. Is this the way a session normally goes with a psychiatrist? I asked myself. Something was wrong, and I felt that that something was me. I sat motionless for a few moments, then slid out of the chair and walked to the door. As I opened it, the doctor muttered for me to have a nice day. I turned around and smiled. "Thank you, sir," I said in a cheerful voice. "Well," Mrs. Catanza said, "how did it go in there?" "I don't know. I don't think I did too well. I think he thinks I'm dumb," I said as Lillian led me back to the car. He wants to see me next week.
Well, then, you must have made a good impression. Relax. You worry too much. Come on now. Let's go home.
I slid into the back seat of Rudy's car. I became lost as the street sign streaked by. I felt more upset than I had before. I wanted to tell Lillian how I felt, but I knew if I did, my words would come out wrong, and I would make a fool of myself in front of her and Rudy.
Lillian broke my concentration.
So,
how do you feel?
I crossed my arms tightly across my chest. Confused, I announced in a firm tone.
Well, she said as she tried to find the right words to make me feel better,
these things take time. My next session was just as bizarre.
Today let's begin our session by telling me, Daniel, how did you feel when your mother abused you? I understand that at one time she...
The doctor flipped through an open file that I had figured was on me. He began to mumble to himself until he closed the folder.
Yes, he stated to himself. You were 8 years old when your mother...
He put on his glasses as he began to read a paper from the file.
Held your arm, your right arm, he nodded again, but at me, over a gas stove, is that correct?
A bomb exploded inside my stomach. My hands began to twitch. Suddenly my entire body felt like rubber. I stared at his facial movements as he casually replaced the sheet of paper on his desk, a paper that contained the most horrible parts of my life. Scribbled on that sheet is my life. My life, which the great doctor holds in his hands. And he still doesn't even know my name. My God, I yelled to myself. This is nuts!
Daniel, why do you think your mother burned you that day? You do remember that incident, don't you, Daniel?
He paused for a moment. I stroked my right forearm as I felt myself hovering in time.
Tell me, he added, how do you feel toward your mother?
David, I said in an ice-cold voice. My name is David, I shouted. I think she's sick, and so are you. He didn't even blink an eye.
You hate your mother, don't you?
That's perfectly understandable. Express yourself. Go on, tell me. We have to begin somewhere so we can work through these things, problems, in order to... I lost track of the doctor's voice. My right arm began to itch. I scratched it before I glanced down. When I did, I saw that my right forearm was engulfed in flames. I nearly jumped out of my seat as I shook my arm, trying to put out the fire. I clenched my fist as I blew on the flames. Oh, my God, no! I screamed to myself. This can't be happening! Please, help me, please! I tried to cry out to the psychiatrist. My lips parted, but nothing came out. I could feel the sides of my face flooding with tears as flames of orange and blue danced on my arm.
Yes, that's it! The doctor yelled. Good! Let it out! That's fine, Daniel! Now, Daniel, tell me, how do you feel right now? Are you upset? Do you feel violent? Do you want to take out your aggressions on someone or something?
I looked at my arm. The fire was gone. As much as I tried, I couldn't control myself from shaking. I cupped my arm and gently blew on it as if to make myself feel better. I leaned forward to get up, still clutching my right arm. I wiped my face as best I could before I opened the door to leave. The doctor sprang up from behind his desk.
All right, you can leave early. We've made progress today. Don't let this upset you. I'll pencil you in for next slam.
I closed the door with all my might. In the outer office, the elderly receptionist jumped from her seat. I stopped by her desk for a moment. The woman seemed as if she were about to scold me until she took a long look at my face. She stopped mid-sentence and turned away as she seized the phone. The next patient turned his head, too, as I marched out of the office. By accident, I slammed the door to Lillian's car. She flung her paperback book into the air.
"David!"
"What?"
"You're early. Is everything all right?"
I clenched my two hands together.
"No! No! No!" I yelled. "That man," I pointed my finger at the building across the street, "is sick! He asked me the weirdest questions. Today he asked me how I felt when..."
"Well, David," she said in a firm voice,
"that's his job. He's the doctor. I'm sure he's only trying to help."
"No," I blurted as I shook my head.
"He doesn't ask questions like you or Ms. Gold, but sick ones. Like, what did it feel like to be burned on a gas stove? And that, it was all right to hate my mother,"
I said, imitating the doctor's tone of voice.
"I don't know what to say or do around him. He's weird. He's the one who needs help, not me. He's the sick one."
"Is that the reason why you were so upset last week? Did he treat you like that last time?" Lillian asked. I nodded.
"I just don't know. I feel so dumb, so small. I mean, I know what happened with Mother. And I was wrong, and I'm really trying to forget all about it. I mean, maybe my mom's sick. I know it's the booze, but I have to know. Am I sick, too? Am I going to end up like her? I just want to know. I just want to know why it all happened the way it did. We were the perfect family. What happened?"
After I blew off my steam, I stretched out in the passenger seat. Lillian leaned over.
"All better now?"
"Yes, ma'am," I answered. She started the car. I could feel myself drifting off to sleep. I held my right arm just above my wrist. I strained myself to stay awake a little bit longer.
"Mrs. C., I don't ever want to go back there. Ever," I said.
And then my world went black. I stayed by myself in my room for the next few days. Then Big Larry asked if I wanted to watch him bowl. I happily accepted, and once again my big foster brother and I set out for another adventure. I found out our destination as we rode our bikes through nearby Daly City. Larry and I rode down the small street that led into the parking lot of Thomas Edison Elementary School. Slowing my bike, I watched as the children played on the swing sets. I skidded to a stop, breathing in the smell of fresh tan bark. It seemed like a lifetime ago that I was a child who happily played in the same play yard during recess. A heavy fog seemed to hover over the school before it lowered itself. The outline of the children became lost as the gray mist seemed to swallow them too. After a few minutes, only their sounds of laughter told me that the children were even there. I shook off the thoughts of my past as I pumped my bike up another hill and away from my old school. About 10 minutes later, Larry and I stopped at the Skyline grocery store, the same store I had stolen from when I ran from the school during my lunch recess. I stayed close to Larry's side. I thought for sure someone would recognize me.
"Are you okay?" Larry asked as we strolled down the aisles.
"Yeah," I answered in a low voice. My eyes darted around every corner. I walked in slow motion and grabbed Larry's belt to tell him to slow down. I was on Mother's turf now.
"Hey, man, what's your problem?"
he asked after my last tug.
"Shh! I used to live here," I whispered.
"Really? Cool,"
Larry said as he chomped on a fruit pie as we were walking outside the store.
"Is that why you acted funny at that school?"
I guess so," I answered. After Big Larry finished two more cream pies, a few candy bars, and two sodas, we set off to the bowling alley. The ride up East Gate Avenue became too much for me. I hopped off my bike and stared down the street as I walked past.
"Stop!"
I barked without warning. From behind me, Larry was panting like a dog.
"What's up?"
"Do me a favor," I said. "Let's take a break and ride down this street." A cloud of mist escaped his mouth.
"Yeah, okay. What gives?"
he asked. "You promise not to tell?"
"Yeah, man, what's up?"
"Don't tell, but I used to live on this street." Larry's head swiveled to the street sign.
"Cool. Which house?"
"The dark green one, on the left side in the middle of the block," I said as I pointed down the street.
"Hey, man, I don't know about this," he said, shaking his head. "Mom would definitely say no. So no, it's not a good idea. What if your mother or your brothers are outside?"
I parked my bike behind a clump of bushes, staying close as I peered down the street. I could hear Larry stumbling behind me. My heart raced. I knew that what I was doing was wrong and dangerous.
"If you decide to accept this mission," Larry whispered, as if we were both working on an assignment from Mission Impossible.
"Come on. The coast is clear," I said, giving Larry the high sign. Larry shook his head.
"I don't know about this."
"Come on," I begged. "I've never asked you for anything. Mrs. C will never find out. Besides, I'll do your chores for a whole week, okay? Please?"
"Okay, kid. It's your neck."
I jumped back on my bike and kept the pressure on my brake as I slowly rode. No one seemed to be outside. I could see that the garage door to Mother's house was closed. As we approached the green and black house, I let out a shriek of joy. "This is so cool," I told myself. Suddenly, a pair of heads popped up from my brother's bedroom window. "Shit," I muttered.
"What's wrong?"
Larry asked. "Just go," I snapped.
"What?"
"I said let's go."
"Hey, man, what's the problem?"
"Not now," I yelled. "Come on, go, go, go." I leaned forward on my handlebars and pedaled so hard that I thought my chain would fly off. I skidded to a stop at the bottom of the street. My heart seemed as if it were stuck in my throat. I waited for the garage door to swing open, followed by Mother racing out in her station wagon, or my brothers flying on their bikes and chasing after me down the street. I had already calculated several escape routes. "Did you see that?" I asked.
"See what, man? What's wrong with you?"
Larry asked. "The window," I said, still panting as I pointed up the street. "My brothers, they saw me." My eyes stayed fixed on every sound, every movement from the house. Nothing happened.
"Man," Larry whined, "you got too much of that James Bond stuff in your head. I didn't see nothing. You're just seeing things. Come on, let's go. And remember," Larry said as he pedaled off, "a deal's a deal."
"Just as long as Mrs. C don't find out," I replied as I tried to catch up. Hours later, I felt a cold chill as Larry and I returned to Lillian's home. "What's up?" I whispered to Larry. He gave me one of his,
I don't know, looks.
"Hey," he said, "I'll go upstairs and get a bite to eat and check things out for you, okay?" I eagerly agreed as I watched Larry from the bottom of the stairs. Suddenly, Mrs. Catanza came into view. By instinct, I hid in the shadows. "Larry!" she barked. "Get that overstuffed face up here this moment! And you!" she pointed her finger down at me. "I can see you. You can wait for me in your room. Now move it! The both of you!" My eyes became the size of silver dollars. I smiled wide, showing my teeth as I pointed at my chest. "Me?" I asked. She returned my smile. I could see that her hands were on her hips. That was the moment I knew I was in serious trouble. I waited in my room and wondered what I may have done. I hadn't stolen any candy from the local stores in the last several days, and Larry Jr. and I were staying out of each other's way. I had no idea what I did wrong. I didn't have to strain my ears to listen. You're supposed to be responsible when David's with you. He's just a baby. You've seen what he's like.
Come on now, Mom, he's 12 years old. He does okay for himself. Besides, we didn't do nothing,
Larry shot back. I still had no idea what Larry and I did wrong.
No?
Then why has David's mother, the Mother Superior, been on the phone with me all afternoon?
Uh-oh, I said to myself as I swallowed hard.
From outside, I heard the sound of a car door slam shut. I jumped to the window to see Rudy wave at me. I slumped back on my bed, waiting my turn.
"Mr. Peltzer, get your little butt in here now," Lillian yelled.
In an instant, I sprang up and ran into the kitchen. I knew I was in an interesting position. Even though I was in trouble, it wasn't as though Mrs. Catanza was going to beat me. As I entered the kitchen, I became anxious to see what exactly Lillian had in store for me. This was the first time that I was in what Big Larry had called the doghouse.
"Tell me," Lillian began with her hands glued on her hips, "tell me that you didn't convince this walking paramecium over here to drive by your mother's house."
I swallowed hard and again attempted to turn on my charm, flashing Mrs. C. my best smile.
"Para, an insect with no brains, and that's what you're going to be if I don't get any answers," Lillian spouted.
"What in the Sam hell is going on here?" Rudy shouted as he entered the kitchen.
"Freeze! Don't either one of you move,"
Lillian warned as she turned to her husband. Without her knowing, I cupped my hand to my mouth and let out a giggle. I thought her remark about Big Larry was hilarious. I could imagine him with big bug eyes and oversized wings flying around, trying to find something to eat. I had never seen Lillian get that upset before. And I knew that all I had to do was ride out the storm. "What's the big deal?" I said to myself. On the other hand, Big Larry looked as if he had just weathered some pretty rough seas. Lillian marched right up to Rudy, whose eyes darted between Larry and me.
"The moron twins, Doofus and Wonder Boy here, took a little ride by his mother's house."
"Jesus," Rudy exhaled.
I stood in front of the three of them, not understanding the consequences of my actions.
"What's the big deal?" I asked myself again. "I'm sorry," I blurted. "It's all my fault. I asked Larry to do it. All we did was ride down the street. What's the problem?" I asked innocently.
"Well, your mother has been on the phone all afternoon ranting and raving about you," Lillian said, pointing a finger at me. "Terrorizing the streets."
"No," I shook my head. "She's lying. All we did was ride down the street. We didn't do anything, honest," I said, doing my best to sound calm.
"David," Lillian said as she let out a deep breath, "don't you understand? You are not allowed to go anywhere near her house, her boys, or her."
My hand shot up in the air.
"Wait! Slow down! What do you mean I'm not allowed?"
I shouted as I tried to get Lillian's attention. But I couldn't stop her. She was on a roll.
"That's only the half of it. Your mother, the sainted Mother Teresa, tells me that if I cannot manage the boy, she'll find someone who can."
My mind fought to sort out the words "allowed" and "manage."
Lillian bent down. "Don't you ever, ever do that again. You're grounded."
"Grounded?"
"That's right, you're grounded until I decide to unground you,"
Lillian finished with a huff before I could ask her what she meant. Larry stood in disbelief.
"Man, I told you that was a bad idea."
"So, that's it?" I asked. I knew Lillian was mad, but I expected, well, I didn't know what to expect.
"This I can handle," I told myself.
As Big Larry wiped his forehead, Lillian marched back in the kitchen.
"Wipe that smirk off your face, Wonder Boy," she said as she looked at me.
"I forgot. Your father's coming over tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, so you'll have to get up early."
"You can manage that, can't you?"
Lillian asked with a sly smile. "Yes, ma'am. I can manage," I replied in a sheepish tone. "And you," she yelled as she turned her attention to Larry, "go to your room." Larry shrugged his shoulders. "Oh, Mom, do I have to?" "Move it," Lillian barked. Once Larry left the kitchen, Lillian wiped her eyes. "Come here and sit down. Now listen very carefully. Your mother..." She stopped to clear her throat. "David, I've been taking care of kids since I don't know when. I have never, ever met anyone as cold as your mother."
"You're telling me?" I interrupted.
"David, this is not the time to act funny. You have to understand something. You're a foster child. A foster child. And because of that, you've got two strikes against you. You have to be careful of everything you say and everything you do. If you get into trouble, we could lose you."
I knew by the seriousness of her tone that what she was telling me was important, but I simply couldn't understand the message. Lillian nodded, indicating she was again talking over my head.
"David, if you get into trouble, you could end up in the hall, juvenile hall. That's where they send foster children who end up in trouble. It's a place you never want to end up. I don't know what your mother's been up to, but you, young man, better learn how to manage yourself a little better. Otherwise, you'll be grounded for a year."
Lillian patted my knees and then walked out of the kitchen. I knew that she was using Mother to scare me. I also knew that Mother could never get to me, now that I was in foster care.
Could she? "Hey, Mrs. C," I shouted. "What's grounded?"
"Oh, don't you worry, you'll soon find out," Lillian laughed as she strolled down the hall and into her bedroom.
"You'll manage."
That evening I thought long and hard about what Lillian had told me. After Rudy and Lillian left for dinner, I had an overwhelming urge to call Mother. Strangely, I just wanted to talk to her, to hear her voice. I picked up the phone several times, but I couldn't bring myself to dial her number. I wiped away my tears as Connie bounced into the kitchen.
"Hey, what's up?"
I broke down and told her what I was trying to do. Without a word, Connie took the phone and dialed my mother's number. Moments later, I nearly choked as I heard the recording that Mother's number was no longer in service. Connie persisted and called the operator, who confirmed the number was now unlisted. I stood in front of Connie, not knowing what to say or do. I didn't know how I should feel. I knew that Mother had changed her telephone number as a form of another game. I wasn't allowed the privilege of her number. After Connie's date came to pick her up, I sat down and stared at the television. I had never been alone in the house before. I counted the hours until Father would pick me up the next morning. I drifted off to sleep as I watched the black and white snowflakes dance across the TV screen. The next morning I stumbled out of bed as I rubbed my eyes, then made my way over to the bedroom window. I turned and looked behind me. I didn't remember how I got to bed. After I put on my best clothes and washed my face twice, I ran to the living room window. I stood tall as I waited for Father. After a few minutes, my shoulders became sore, but I remained rigid as the clock in the living room struck 7 o'clock. At 7:35, I heard the distinctive sounds of Father's borrowed VW. I allowed myself a smile after making sure my hair was just right. I could see an off-brown VW struggle as it made its way up the street. But the car continued to drive by.
"Well, maybe he doesn't have the right address," I told myself. "He'll be back in a few seconds."
At 7:55, I heard the sound of another VW bug go past Lillian's home. I then convinced myself that I had heard the wrong time, that Father would pick me up at 8 o'clock, not 7 o'clock, that I had made another mistake,
Whoops! Stupid me, I said to myself.
8 o'clock came and went, as did more than a dozen cars that cruised by. As every car drove up the street, I knew in my heart that the next car had to be the one with Father in it. Around 9 o'clock, Lillian yawned as she stumbled into the kitchen.
David, are you still here?
I merely nodded.
Well, let me check the calendar. I know your father said 7 a.m. sharp. For goodness sake, I wrote it down.
I know, Mrs. C., I said, trying not to show my feelings. He'll be here any... My head spun to the window when I heard the rumblings of another VW lurch its way up the steep street.
See? Here he is!
I cried out as I pointed at the window. I grabbed Lillian's hand. I wanted to show her off as Dad pulled into the driveway.
Yes!
I shouted. The car slowed for a moment, but only to shift into a lower gear before chugging its way past. My hand fell from Lillian's grip. She looked at me as if she wanted to say something to make me feel better. My insides felt tight. A solid lump was caught in my throat.
"Don't say it," I yelled. "He'll be here, I know he will. You'll see. My dad'll be pulling up here any second. You watch. My father loves me, and one of these days we're going to live together and we'll be happy for the rest of our lives. I know she doesn't love me, but my dad does. She's the one who needs a psychiatrist, not me. She's the sick one."
My chest seemed to shrink as I continued to ramble on. I felt a firm grip on my shoulder. I clenched my right fist, spun around, and swung wildly. As my eyes focused on my target, I tried to stop, but I couldn't. A moment later, I struck Rudy square in the forearm. I looked up with tears in my eyes. Rudy had never seen me act like that before. In an instant, I wanted to apologize, but I couldn't. I was tired of being sorry for everything, for not understanding words or phrases, for feeling so humiliated by Larry Jr. and the crazy psychiatrist, for riding my bike down the street, or for just trying to hear my mother's voice. And then I was telling myself that I was the one who got the time wrong for when Father would drop by. I had known all along that Father wasn't coming, that he was probably lost in some bar. He never made it for a visit. But I had always told myself that this time was going to be different, that today Father was going to make it, and we would have such a good time. I just couldn't accept the realities of my life. How in God's name did I let it come to this? I asked myself. I knew as I stood staring out the living room window that I would spend another day hiding in the only place I felt safe and warm, the covers of my bed. I looked up at Rudy, and then at Lillian. I wanted to tell them both how sorry I was, how bad I felt inside. I opened my mouth. Before I could say the words, I turned away. As I marched into my room, I could hear Rudy whisper to Lillian, "I think we have a serious problem." Chapter 6 The Defiant One. A few weeks before I started the sixth grade, I began to turn off my feelings. By then, I was completely drained of emotion. I had become fed up with the teeter-totter effect of my new life. On the upside, I was elated to play in the bright rays of the summer sun. On the downside, I dreaded being teased by other children, or having to wait like a trained dog for the remote possibility of a visit from Father. I was fully aware that a cold change was taking place inside of me. I didn't care. I told myself that in order to survive, I had to become so hard so that I would never allow anyone to hurt me again.
At times, instead of riding to the park, I would journey to the local grocery store and stuff my pockets full of candy that I would steal. I didn't even want the sweets. I knew I could never eat all those candy bars. I stole to discover if I could get away with it. I felt a gut-wrenching thrill of calculating my next move, followed by the spine-tingling sensation of strolling out of the store uncaught. Sometimes I'd steal from the same store 2 or 3 times a day. Whatever I didn't smuggle into Mrs. Catanza's home, I'd give away to kids in the park, or I would leave the candy in small piles just outside the store's entrance. When swiping candy became too boring, I raised the stakes by stealing larger objects, toy models. I became so arrogant that several times I would simply strut into the store, snatch an oversized model, and stroll right out, all in less than a minute. Some of the kids from the neighborhood who had heard of my candy giveaways would follow me to the stores and watch me. I loved the attention. It got to the point where the kids would dare me to steal things for them. My only concern was for acceptance. It was almost like the days when I would play with the younger foster children at Aunt Mary's home. I felt so good inside whenever the kids would call my name or greet me as I rode into the play park. Now I was receiving the same kind of attention again. Whenever I decided to steal a serious item, I became extremely focused inside. Before making my move, I would imagine every aisle and the entire layout of the toy shelves. I plotted my primary and alternate routes of escape. In the event that I was caught, plan number 1 called for an off-the-cuff lie, while plan number 2 meant that I would simply run like hell. One time, as a group of kids waited outside the store, I turned myself off, once again becoming a cyborg, half-human, half-machine. My mission? Grab and go. Johnny Jones wanted a B-17 Flying Fortress model airplane. I accepted the challenge, taking 3 deep breaths before grabbing the glass door and pulling it toward my chest. I could hear the boys cheering me on, but I shut them out as the door closed behind me. I knew that somewhere in the store Johnny was watching. He wanted to see my bravery in person. I didn't care. I had an objective to accomplish. In order not to be noticed by the string of checkout clerks, I walked down the first aisle leading to the back of the store. I then swiveled right and slowed my pace. By then my ears had become like radar, distinguishing between the sounds of the shoppers and the store employees. I slowed my pace before I turned right again and bent my head down to see if anyone was behind me. The coast was clear. My heart was racing as my objective came into view on the top shelf of aisle 4. I knew this job was going to be a challenge. For a split second, something didn't feel right. I thought of aborting. Negative, I told myself a second later. As I reached up with both hands, I could hear, then feel someone walking up the aisle. I shook the thought clear as I strained my legs to reach a little higher. A moment later, I plucked my prize from the shelf. I showed no emotion as I marched down the aisle, passing Johnny, who was grinning from ear to ear. My chest was beating like a drum. Now the hard part. Just in front of me was the door to victory. Ever so slightly, I tipped my head and listened for anyone behind me or someone shouting for me to stop. The delicate moment had arrived. My face became tight as I reached out to push the door open, just enough to allow me to slide out, so in case someone had followed me, that person would have to spend the extra time and effort of pushing the door open, providing me an additional chance of sprinting away. I smiled to myself, knowing that I had thought of everything. Behind the glass door, I could hear the group of boys clapping and shouting for me. Johnny was already outside, his eyes as big as pancakes. I broke my concentration for a moment, but only for a moment.
thinking what my latest risk would do for my acceptance among the group. At times in the past, the boys had teased me and played tricks on me in the park. I knew all along that they were taunting me, but I went along with the gags anyway. Any attention was better than none. I held my head high, smiling as I slid out the door. By then the boys were laughing, and they began to attract attention. I thought I heard the sound of the door swish open from behind me. I started to reach over with my right hand and toss my prize to Johnny when screams of laughter erupted. Johnny laughed so hard that he had tears in his eyes. I snapped out of my concentration and laughed too. "David," Johnny howled. "I'd like you. Oh, man, this is just too much," he giggled. "I'd like you to meet my dad." In an instant, my feet transformed into solid blocks of ice. I turned to see a man in a red Walgreens vest with a name tag that read, "Mr. Jones, Store Manager." Mr. Jones snatched the model, then grabbed my shirt. I walked in front of him as he opened the door to the store. As the glass door closed behind me, I turned my head. The group of boys leaned on their bikes and yelled, "Busted!" at the top of their lungs.
"We've had our eye on you for quite a while. My son told me all about you, David." I closed my eyes, thinking what a complete fool I was.
I wasn't sorry for stealing. I knew that what I was doing was wrong, and I had accepted that fact. I even knew that my luck would eventually run out, but to be set up by the kid's father. I knew that Johnny himself was swiping candy at the store next to Walgreens. "I should have known better," I told myself. "I knew they couldn't have liked me for just being another kid." About an hour later, I returned to Lillian's home. I opened the door and could hear her run from the couch. As I dragged myself up the stairs, she stood with her hands glued to her hips. Her face was cherry red. I slid into the kitchen chair before Lillian began her fury of questions, statements, and past observations on my past behavior. I simply stared through her, nodding when I felt a response was necessary. I tried to convince her that I was indeed sorry. As the words spilled out, they seemed too easy. I knew my heart wasn't in it. Afterward, I plodded off to my room where I lay on my bed, staring at the ceiling. I was grounded for a week. "Big deal," I told myself. A few moments after Rudy came home, I stood in front of him. I silently let out a sigh. "Round two," I told myself.
"I don't know what it is with you," Rudy began to rave, "but I'll tell you this. I'm not putting up with a thief. I know I've let some things slide by, and I know that Lil's a bit easy on you. I can accept that. I also know you've had some hard times, but I'm not going to stand for this anymore. That potty mouth of yours, the fighting, the hitting, the yelling, calls from your mother, slamming my doors around this home. Do you know how much doors cost?" "Well, do you?" I shook my head no. "Well, it's more than you'll ever make. I work hard, and I love you kids. But I don't need your crap. You hear me?" Rudy yelled. I nodded again, knowing that Rudy knew I didn't care. "Are you the one who's been stealing my cigarettes?" My head swung upward. "No, sir." "And you expect me to believe you?" Rudy shot back. "If I hear you've caused any more problems, I'll send your little butt to the hill." My face lit up.
"The hill?"
"Oh, now I have your attention. Ask around." Rudy twirled around. "Ask Larry Jr. here. I've driven him to the hill a time or two, haven't I, Larry?"
Larry Jr., who had been chuckling behind Rudy's back, now put on a serious, frightened face.
"Right, Dad," he said in a fearful tone as he bowed his head.
I don't want to. You're a bit young, but I'll load that butt of yours in the car and haul you myself. If there's one thing I will not tolerate, it's a liar and a thief.
Rudy huffed as Lillian approached his side.
And Lil can cry her eyes out, but that's the way it's going to be in this house. Am I clear, young man?
I nodded.
Are you too big in the britches that you can't say yes or no?
Rudy barked.
Yes, sir,
I said in a defiant tone.
I understand. Then go to your room. You're grounded.
I sat in my room and stewed.
Yeah,
I said to myself.
Grounded. Big deal.
I wasn't mad at Rudy or Lillian for yelling at me, or even for being set up by Johnny and the other kids. I was furious for allowing myself to let down my guard.
David,
I yelled at myself,
how could you have been so stupid?
I then jumped off the bed and began pacing the floor, becoming more upset at everything in my life. That Saturday I put little effort into my chores. I carelessly vacuumed the home and barely removed the dust from the furniture. When the chores were completed, Rudy took Lillian shopping for groceries. All alone, I rocked on Rudy's recliner chair and flipped through the TV channels. I soon lost interest when I realized that the morning cartoons had already been on. I rolled out of the chair and strolled over to the living room window, staring outside. I thought that maybe Dad would visit me tomorrow. After a few seconds, I chuckled to myself, knowing how foolish I was being. Suddenly, the blur of a kid whizzing down the street on his bike caught my eye. Without thinking, I ran into my bedroom, emptied my money jar into my hand, and grabbed my jacket before trotting down the stairs. I proudly wheeled out my bike and made it a point to slam the door extra hard. I had decided that I was going to run away. I felt a rush of excitement as the howling wind struck my face, and I pedaled up and down the slopes leading into Daly City and the Saramont 6 movie theater. Once there, I parked my bike and watched James Bond 3 times in a row before sneaking into the other shows. Later that evening, the theater attendant kicked me out so he could close for the day. The reality of my decision began to sink in. As I unlocked my bike, I shivered from the chilling fog that seeped through my clothes. After my stomach growled, I dug into my pocket to count my savings. $2.30. I pocketed the change and turned my hunger off, focusing on shelter instead. To help stay warm, I pedaled my bike. Only after I rode past the darkened homes in the neighborhoods did I realize that it was after 11:30 p.m. Sometime later, I rode down the street leading to my old elementary school. I coasted past the play yard, listening to the sounds of the swings sway from the breeze. Afterward, I walked my bike up the seemingly endless hill of Eastgate Avenue. When I reached the top of Crestline Avenue, just as I had a few weeks before, I hid beside a clump of bushes as I peered down the foggy street. I couldn't resist riding down the street. I stopped a few houses above Mother's house. A soft yellow light shone through her draped bedroom windows. I wondered whether Mother ever thought about me as I did her. I began to think of how my brothers spent their time at Mother's house. A howling wind blew through my hair. I rolled up the collar of my shirt. I realized that the house I was spying on wasn't the same home that had entertained an army of children when Mother was a Cub Scout leader, or the same home that had been the most popular home on the block during Christmas season so many years ago. After Mother turned off her bedroom light, I said a prayer before I coasted down the street to return to the area by the movie theater. That night I fell asleep curled up, shivering underneath an air conditioning unit. The next day, I spent the entire day in the movie theater and fell asleep to Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon. That evening after the theater closed,
I rode up to the local Denny's restaurant, where I salivated as plates of food whizzed by the counter. The manager, who had eyed me for 2 days now, sat down and talked to me. After a few minutes of prodding, I gave him the Catanzas phone number. I gulped down a burger before Rudy picked me up in his blue Chrysler.
"David," Rudy began, "I'm not going to badger you. All I can say is you can't keep acting like this. This is no way to live. For you or for us. You've got to shape up."
Once we arrived at their home, I took a quick bath, then drifted off to sleep as Rudy and Lillian discussed how to handle me. The next day, Ms. Gold made a rare appearance. She didn't seem to be her bouncy self, and I noticed she forgot to give me a hug.
"David, what seems to be the problem here?"
she asked in a firm voice. I played with my hands as I tried to avoid looking at Ms. Gold.
"How come you never come to visit?" "David, now you know there are lots of other children who, like you, need my help. You understand that, don't you?"
"Yes, ma'am," I said in agreement. I felt guilty taking Ms. Gold's time away from the other children, but I missed seeing her as much as I had before the trial.
"David, Mrs. Catanza tells me that you're having a very hard time adjusting here. Is it that you don't like the home? What's going on inside of you? Where's that cute little boy I knew a few weeks ago, huh?"
I stared at my hands. I was too embarrassed to answer. After a minute of silence, she said,
"Don't worry. I know all about the psychiatrist. It's not your fault. We'll find you one who's used to relating with kids."
"I'm not a kid. I'm 12 years old, and I'm tired of being picked on," I stated in a cold tone. I had to catch myself before I revealed another side of my personality that, until recently, had never existed.
"David, why are you so upset?"
"I don't know, Ms. G. Sometimes I just..."
Ms. Gold scooted closer to me from the other side of the couch. She lifted my chin with her fingers as I sniffled and wiped my nose. "Are you getting enough sleep? You don't look so good. Do you not like it here?"
"Yes, ma'am," I nodded. "I like it here a lot. Mrs. Catanza is real nice. It's just that sometimes I get scared. I try to tell her, but I can't. There's just so much I don't understand, and I want to know why."
"David, I know this may be hard for you to swallow, but what you're feeling right now, right this moment, is perfectly normal. If you weren't a little confused or worried, then I'd be concerned. You're perfectly fine. But what I am concerned about right now is your behavior. I know you're a better boy than you've been acting here recently. Am I right? And Mr. Catanza is not very happy with you right at this moment, is he?"
"So I'm okay?"
Ms. Gold smiled.
"Yeah, for the most part, I'd say so. We've still got to iron out a few wrinkles, but if I could only get you to modify your behavior, you'd be fine. Now, do you have any questions for me?"
"Yes, ma'am. Have you heard anything from my dad?"
Ms. Gold raised her eyebrows.
"Hasn't he been by to visit? He was supposed to have seen you weeks ago," she said as she flipped through her notebook.
I shook my head no. "I wrote him some letters, but I don't think I have the right address. I don't get any letters back. And I don't have his phone number. Do you know if my dad's okay?"
She swallowed hard. "Well, I do know your father's moved into another apartment, and he's been transferred to a different fire station."
Tears dribbled down my face.
"Can I call him? I just want to hear his voice."
"Honey, I don't have his number, but I promise I'll try to call your father as soon as I can. I'll try to call him today. Is that why you drove by your mother's house and tried to call her a few weeks ago?"
"I don't know," I answered. I didn't dare tell Ms. Gold about cruising by Mother's house the other Saturday night.
"How come I'm not allowed to call her?"
"D, David, what is it you're expecting? What are you looking for?
She asked in a soft tone, as she too seemed to search for answers.
I don't understand why I'm not allowed to see or talk to her or the boys. What did I do? I just want to know why things happened like they did. I don't want to turn into the kind of person she is now. The psychiatrist says I should hate my mom. You tell me what I'm supposed to do. Well, I don't believe you should hate your mother, or anyone else for that matter. How could I put this?
Ms. Gold put a finger to her mouth and gazed at the ceiling.
David, your mother is a wounded animal. I have no logical answer why she changed her telephone number, or why she acts the way she does. She drew me to her side. David, you're a little boy.
Excuse me, a 12-year young man, who's a little confused, thinks too much about some things and not enough about other things.
I know you must have had to think ahead a great deal in order to survive, but you need to turn that off. You may never find your answers, and I don't want your past to tear you up. I don't even know why these things happen to children, and I